Michael.
Hey Alex, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I am super. You want to just do this thing?
Yeah, might as well just go ahead.
Where are you anyway?
Right now I'm just outside Calgary in Canada.
You're in Canada. Are you Canadian?
Yes, I am.
That is awesome. You went to U UBC?
Yeah, yes, I did in Vancouver.
Awesome. So what did you study there?
At UBC, I studied a Bachelor of Commerce specializing in marketing and international business.
Wow, that sounds really impressive.
It was a great time. Yeah, I just graduated this year, actually.
Oh, did you really?
Yes, yeah, my convocation is at the end of this month, actually.
What does that mean? That's when
That's
you're.
when you get to walk the stage, the whole cap and gown thing.
Wow, it sounds awesome. When did you come to Shanghai?
I first came to Shanghai in November of 2012.
Oh wow, that was a while ago.
Yeah, it's coming up on that.
Wow, it's like 5 and a half, almost 6 years ago. I didn't realize it was that long ago.
Yeah, it's definitely been a while, but definitely I am now, that's for sure.
So how did you so you went through one of these Next Step Connections programs, right?
Yeah, I did.
And how did you find out about it?
I found out about it just through a simple Google search. I decided I wanted to do a gap year, so I was looking into different programs and came across Next Step Connections.
What does a gap year mean, though? A lot of, because most people in like the Western, not Western hemisphere, but like in Canada and the United States don't take gap years, right?
Yeah, definitely. So after I finished high school, I was all set to go into engineering and fulfill my dream of being a neurosurgeon eventually, which obviously, according to my current d degree, did not end up ha happening. So I decided to take a year, and that decided that in about I finished high school in June of 2012, and decided to take a gap year in about July. So that was just a year without going to university, but I wanted to do something where I was still growing as an individual and learning new experiences.
Wait a second, so you did this before you were even in college?
Yes, I did, yeah.
That's even more amazing. And by the way, my brother's a neurosurgeon.
It's a great job, I think.
Yeah, he's pretty good at it.
Most of them are.
Yeah, it's kind of binary, right? Like if you're not so good at it, you probably don't do it for that
Yeah, you wouldn't have made it into a residency or anything if you weren't that good.
I hadn't actually thought about it like that, but yeah, you can't be like a so-so neurosurgeon, can you?
Well, I wouldn't want brain surgery from a so-so neurosurgeon, so
Yeah,
I hope not.
or spinal surgery. That would be bad. It's like, this works 50% of the time. Not a good thing. Wait, so that's really cool. So, because most of the students that go through the program, I'm presuming, are sophomores, juniors in college, right?
Yeah, definitely. Like among my friend circle from the Next Step interns in Shanghai, most folks were sophomores or juniors or even had finished university and were sort of using this as a gap year before they started full-time work.
Right, so I spoke to a student last week or the week before, I can't remember, and she had actually done it after she had graduated. And that's why I was wondering, because when you said you're just about to graduate, I thought, okay, that's you were in college for like 15 years. But no, actually, you didn't go when you were in school at all.
Yeah, but I definitely found it a good experience, even though I was a bit younger than the other folks that I was working with.
Did you care though, really?
No, it was interesting. I think my parents were like, "Oh, so why are you hanging out with people in their 40s?" And I was like, "Well, they're just my colleagues, they're my friends." So you just end up really getting along with everyone.
Yeah, so what is that like when you tell your parents, like, were you a traveler before that? You go, you tell your parents, you're like, you know what, I'm going to take a gap year, which I'm guessing was a surprise, a slight surprise to them. But then more than that, you're like, I'm not only am I going to take a gap year, but I'm going to go to China as well.
I think, to be honest, they weren't too surprised because I first did an exchange when I was in grade 8, so that's 12, 13 years old. I did a year in Holland, and that's something I had been pushing my parents to let me do. And then
Why?
growing up, because I'm from a small town just outside Calgary in Canada, so my parents wanted me to have a diverse experience. So we used to host a lot of exchange students from all around the world, and I think it's really inspired me from a young age that these girls, especially 16, 17, were off on their own, traveling, going to live in a new country. So in grade eight, I had the opportunity to go to Holland and live with one of the families of our exchange students. And it really encouraged me to work hard as well, because I spent the summer before scooping ice cream so I could afford my flight. Because my parents basically said, okay, if you pay for the flight, you can go.
Good for
And
you.
yeah, and that really started me on sort of a passion for travel. The year after that, in grade nine, I did a year in France. And then every summer, I used to return to Holland and just hang out and work a bit for the summer and travel around Europe as well.
So, but you're from outside Vancouver, you said, right?
I'm from a small town outside Calgary. It's
Calgary,
sort of
sorry,
close to
excuse
Banff.
me.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah,
but that
no
means,
worries.
no, but that means you're not from the French-speaking part of Canada, is that right?
No, I'm not.
You're
It's
not,
from
right?
the
So
Anglo.
the right. So when you went to France, you didn't speak French already, right?
I spoke a little bit, but to be honest, with the French curriculum in Canada, you take 4 years and you can count to 10. So it was very, very, very basic.
Which is weird considering there's a whole entire part of Canada that's French.
Yeah,
But
that's
it just is what
funny.
it is.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just so happy that as an eighth grader and then as a ninth grader, you spent just a year outside of your home country. So it must have meant by the time you got to 12th grade or graduated from high school, it was just old hat to travel, right? Getting on a plane by yourself, navigating airports by yourself. This was simple, right?
Yeah, definitely. And then as well, just getting to know people in a new environment, whether it's a high school or a workspace, and just become really comfortable with potentially new situations and environments.
So, were you concerned at all about, Holland is a Western country, France is a Western country, China obviously is in Asia, and is just monolithic and huge in and of itself. But were you concerned at all about just going to some place that was completely different than you had been before, or not really?
To be honest, no. I just remember being really excited for a new country and a new continent as well, because I'd never been to Asia before.
Right. But how about your friends in high school? Were they all as sort of open-minded and progressive as you were, and frankly, were all their parents too, or did your friends' parents think that you and your mom and dad were just insane?
They thought that we were a little bit insane. I
A
do
little
recall.
bit.
Yeah, a little bit, maybe a bit more. I recall one of my friend's moms, we had a goodbye barbecue for me, and like, oh wow, how can you let Alex go to China? I mean, isn't it so dangerous and so far away?
Dangerous, right?
Meanwhile, after being to China multiple times now, I feel much safer there than I do in any part of Canada, especially walking home at night.
I was going to say, yeah, for a Caucasian woman walking down the street in Shanghai, like, and even for an Asian woman, to be fair, like, nothing bad's going to happen to you. It's just not that kind of place, right? There's violent crime everywhere in the world, but it's not so prevalent that you have to be careful of dark corners. And to be fair, I was in Shanghai for the first time in, before you were born, probably in 1991.
Yes, 3 years before I was
Right, pretty good guess on my part.
born.
And I didn't feel that dangerous either. It didn't feel that dangerous to me either back then. So, if anything, it's probably gotten safer as it's gotten wealthier,
Yeah, definitely.
I would think. But 2012, when you were there, it's almost 6 years ago. What did you do to communicate with your family when you were there?
So to communicate, I mostly use Skype, and
Okay.
then as well, I got my parents and everyone on the WeChat train as well. So use WeChat a lot as well.
See, there must be four people in Canada that use WeChat, at least on that side of Canada.
Basically.
Right. You were the WeChat pioneers in Canada.
Exactly, a trendsetter, what can I
Did you
say?
get stock in that or something? You should have.
I know. Kicking myself now.
Was there some kind of affiliate marketing deal you had with them? Every Canadian that signed up, you got some kind of cut for, or not
Oh,
really?
definitely. I have complete control over the Canadian market. It's pretty great.
Maybe you should be interviewing me. So what was it like when you, because 2012 is a long time ago in a way, right? And particularly in internet years, it's just like a lifetime ago. What was it like when you landed? Like, did you land in the Pudong airport? I'm just trying to remember what it was like back then.
Yeah, so I landed at the Pudong airport and was very, very jet-lagged. But it was like all the signs at the airport were in English, and next up had
Wow.
someone come pick me up as well. So it was a very, like, just a seamless transition, to be honest.
Nice. And did you fly alone, or were there other kids that were on the program with you that flew from Canada? Or were you the only Canadian student that was going?
I flew alone. It was actually really lucky because my roommate, who was with Next Step as well, she was American and had just arrived about 2 days before. So we were able to quickly form a friendship. But most of the people that I met during the program were either American or European.
Dan, do you remember how many kids were on the program when you were there?
I think in Shanghai there was about 12 to 20. We Next Step organized monthly events for us. Of course, not everyone attended, but
Right.
I think there'd be around 12 to 20.
Okay, I'm just trying to. There were eight, I believe, last year in Bangkok. This year, there will be 16. So that seems like the right number. So, what kind of internship did you do when you were there?
So I actually did two internships. My first was with MeToWe, which is a Canadian-founded social enterprise, and I was working out of their China office doing youth engagement. So essentially designing their youth programming, going into high schools, talking about leadership and public speaking. And then my second internship was with Envalar, which was a manufacturer of microinverters for solar panels, and that was more of a business development and sales role.
But that's amazing. Well, how old are you? 17? 18?
I was 18 at the time.
But did they treat you like you were a college student? In other words, they gave you the same level of responsibility. They didn't treat you like you were a little kid and they just kind of let you do the right thing?
Yeah, because it was a really cool experience because I wasn't sure going in how much freedom or basically like how long of a leash I'd have. And at both internships, I was very fortunate that I was given the same projects as my colleagues and then just given a lot of freedom to create essentially the programming that I wanted.
Right, so how was China different than France and Holland?
I think one of the things that was different in China compared to France and Holland is just there's a certain energy. Like it's a very like entrepreneurial energy, and I think France and Holland does have it, but to a much lower degree. Whereas in China, just that energy seems to be everywhere, and just you can create things much faster. For example, with the programming with MeToWe, we were able to create it and implement it in the span of a couple months. Whereas in the West, I think that would take a lot longer because there's a lot more channels to go through.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting comment, right? It's very dynamic there, and it seems most Westerners probably don't understand the level of dynamism, right? They feel like there's still copycatting going on there, when in reality, there's a ton of innovation. I think that was even true back in 2012, but more so today as well.
Yeah, it's really incredible how China's transitioning more into an economy based on innovation versus copycatting and just like basic production. And it'll be cool to see where it's going to be in 5 years or even 1 or 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's just going to keep going further and further away from the rest of the world. Just the resources that they have to be able to do that, I think, are just unending in a way. And I think it's fascinating to watch from here. I've been watching it obviously for years. Do you come back? I noticed that your Skype still says that you're in Shanghai.
Yeah, I've been back about 7 or 8 times. So afterwards in seven or eight times in 6 years. So I after my first year of university, I ended up going back to China and rejoining the MeToWe team for an internship. And then I've gone back every year since, whether it's for language studies or internships. And I actually did a university exchange for 6 months last year in Shanghai Fudan University.
I noticed that. So you did go to Fudan University. You studied there for 6 months. So are you a Mandarin speaker now?
Yeah, I'm actually currently studying for my HSK 4, which is the standardized Mandarin test.
What does four mean? Is that the highest level, the lowest level? What does it mean?
There's 6 levels, so by the time you get to 4, you should be able to essentially be conversationally fluent, and then 5 is you can do like newspapers and stuff like that. And then by level 6, you're supposed to essentially have the same capacity as a Chinese person.
By 6, you'd have to change your name to like a Chinese name.
Basically, you lose everything else.
Give up your citizenship in Canada and have to move to Harbin or something.
Oh man. Well, I'm Canada. I think I'd be okay with the winter. You
That's why I
never
went to the coldest place I could think of in China, which is why I said that anyway. So, how did you feel like the rest of the kids? Because everybody else that was on the program was older than you. Were there other kids there that, like, maybe didn't have the same ability to adapt as quickly as you did? Maybe that hadn't been abroad as many times as you, or whose parents maybe weren't as encouraging as your parents were?
Yeah, definitely. There was a couple that this was their first trip abroad. So they'd gone from college in the States to coming to China. And they definitely, I think, were a bit more, not as open, I think, to, for example, like trying new experiences or trying to meet new Chinese friends. So they did a lot of like, okay, let's meet for burgers every single time we hang out or meet this American bar, which I think is like when you're in a new country, it's so important just to try the food, even if it seems a bit like weird and intimidating. Like I had tripe for the first time in my life,
Right.
and just to sort of try those new experiences. But I think even if people, there were some people that it was their first time abroad as well, and they just jumped full into the experience, which I thought was really awesome.
So where do you get this from, though? I mean, when I was a kid, we had an exchange student in our house too from Sweden, right? And Sweden's, a pretty standard issue Scandinavian country, right? But I don't feel like it changed my life that much, even in retrospect. But it seems to me like your parents had some kind of plan. You said already that you lived in a smaller town, and it maybe sounded like that they were using the reverse to expose you to things going on in the rest of the world, even if you weren't going to the rest of the world. And I guess as a 12-year-old, you said, you know what, the best way to do this is for me to leave. But why do you think they did that in the first place? Like, did they have those similar experiences as well?
No, they d didn't. My dad actually grew up mostly in northern Canada, right around the Arctic Circle, and my mom grew up in Toronto, which is very multicultural and diverse. But neither of them traveled too much. But I think really they just wanted to get, like you said, sort of go beyond those small town views, especially in terms like in my small town, everyone at the time, like about 10, 15 years ago, was Caucasian, and like sort of grew up in the small town, worked in the big city of Calgary, and then like commuted, and that was their life. And I think my parents just wanted to really broaden my worldview and sort of get a diverse idea of opinions and identities into my worldview, which I'm very fortunate that I had that experience growing up.
Well, extremely fortunate, right? Because just imagine how different your life would be. First of all, if you'd never had exchange students in the house, but second of all, if as a 12-year-old, your parents had said, no, you can't go to Holland, or as a 13-year-old, you can't go to France, right? And in a way, it was kind of neat because they also made you earn your way into it, right? It wasn't just like a freebie. And whether they had the resources to do it or not is two things. One, none of my business, and of no consequence either, because they still taught you if you want to go get something, you have to earn it first. And that's neat. It's hard to teach a 12-year-old that, I think.
Yeah, no, definitely set me up for how I think now and just how I really value my own hard work in creating experiences, which I think is a really cool identity to have.
Yeah, and I guess the bigger question for me is, was it harder for you to come home than it was for you to leave?
I think it definitely was, just because whether it's in Shanghai or Holland or France, there's so much diversity, and especially in Shanghai, like we already talked about how dynamic Shanghai is and how innovative and that energy. And I think while Canada is amazing and beautiful, and I'm very fortunate to be Canadian and have grown up here, I think that spark is missing. So it definitely was difficult to come home.
Yeah, I mean, the thing for me is not that Canada or Calgary or even a suburb of Calgary is not dynamic or is boring. It's just that that's where you were born, so you knew everything about it already, right? For me, when I moved to Japan, it's different, but not that different really at its core. But the reality was that I didn't know how to do anything there. So every day I had to wake up and figure stuff out. And I always thought, and remember, I haven't gone and back and lived in the United States for almost 30 years, so I've never actually tested this. But I do think that going home is harder because it points out just how banal it is and how boring it is and how easy it is in relative terms to just going to a new place, particularly for someone who's as adaptable as you are and who's so willing to learn and so open to new things. At home, it's hard to find new things once you're like 20, let's say. I don't know how old, pick an age, right? But in a new country, everything's new.
Yeah, definitely. I couldn't agree more.
Right? So what is it that you keep with you today from that experience that you had? Do you talk to students that are at university and say, if you haven't been abroad yet, you've got to go abroad?
Yeah, to touch on talking to students at university, first off, I definitely am an advocate for going abroad, whether it's talking to people like, okay, I'm just going to do my 4 years and get out of here and start working at an accounting firm in Vancouver, and me saying to them, okay, do exchange, take a summer, do a Europe trip or a Southeast Asia trip, or do co-op, which is basically an internship in university. Do that overseas, like get out and explore, because I think especially when you're young, you have such more freedom just to go and experience overseas. You don't have a dog or a long-term partner or anything like that. So it's so easy to have these experiences and go for extended periods of time. So just very, very encouraging of my friends and peers at university to go ahead and take these opportunities.
And what do you do if one of your peers gives you pushback a little bit and just says, you know, I can't afford it, or I'm too afraid to go, and my parents think something bad is going to happen to me? What do you say to them?
I think for the can't afford it one, like oftentimes when I'm abroad and Instagramming and Snapchatting a lot, I'll get messages being like, wow, Alex, you travel so much. How can you afford it? And I'll say, like, it's really comes to what you value. So if you're going out for dinner 4 or 5 times a week in Vancouver, then after a month or two, that's the same as a flight to Japan. So I really pick and choose my experiences and just like try and tell them the value of like what you're spending in Vancouver, wherever you are, really will cut into your travel budget. So you can afford to spend $2,000 a year on nightclub drinks in Vancouver, but you can't afford to travel. So you really have to pick and choose.
Yeah, I mean, that's the example that I was going to give, right? If you're sitting in a bar with your friends lamenting the fact that you can't afford to get on a plane and go somewhere, well, then you have a sort of a value discovery problem.
Now, it's a special type of irony.
Right. Yeah, it's a very special type of irony. Now, given the fact that there are plenty of people who have responsibilities at home that are very expensive and that they do give up and sacrifice a lot and they still can't afford it, that's a different category. And I completely understand that as well, right? Because you don't know who they're taking care of at home. But for most people, you know, and I didn't grow up in a wealthy family at all, right? But for most people that I knew, there was a way for them to figure it out, whether it was a scholarship or just like getting an extra job, you know, working 2 jobs after school or whatever. There's a way to do it. And once you do it and your eyes are open to things that are going on in the rest of the world, I think it's really hard to go back to just a regular life.
Yeah, definitely it is.
Yeah. I don't know. So what do you, did you say you already have a job after you graduate?
I'm actually searching right now. So I'm hoping to get back into Asia. So I've just been looking for opportunities. And for this summer, actually, I'm just planned to stay back in my hometown, just bartend to pay off my student loan, so that when an opportunity does come, I don't need to be picky with something that's offering me the most money because I have these student loan payments.
Right. Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I remember I had student loans when I graduated from college as well. So it's always good to get rid of those as fast as you can. And I like how you say that. You're going to attend bar, which is just what we were talking about, and probably talk to people that are lamenting the fact that they can't afford to get on a plane and go to Shanghai.
Yeah, exactly. Give them some inspiration with their gin and tonic.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting to me just how sort of mature you seem about this whole concept of finding value and just understanding how to be so adaptable. And I don't know, it's just really mature for somebody of your age, right?
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and I think it's neat actually that you want to come back to Asia as well.
Yeah, well, definitely got the bug for everything that's going on in Asia. And
there should be tons of opportunities for somebody like you who, you know, is open to new things, but is also a Mandarin speaker as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So
there are tons of gaps to be bridged. And as you know, the level of dynamism and just it's changing so fast in China. And there's a whole bunch of startups taking place, just a whole bunch of stuff to do. You should be able to find something pretty easy, I would think.
Yeah, I've been talking to a lot of folks who are in the startup ecosystem in China, and like they're talking about what they've accomplished just in a year in terms of funding or growth, and it's really incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how closely you follow this, but look at a company like Mobike, right? This sort of biking thing where it's what are they called, like unchained bikes or whatever, right? You can just,
yeah, like with the QR code,
they have advertisements on them and they have GPSs and they collect data, all this kind of stuff, right? But that company is only 2 years old, and I believe it was just sold for, I don't know, a couple of $1 billion, but that's a 2-year-old company.
Yeah, and even in terms of expansion, like they have their sights set on the stars. Like one of my professors from Fudan, he's in charge of their Latin American expansion, and even MOBEX competitor OFO has been popping up around the States as well, which is pretty cool for a company that's just a year or two old.
Yeah, I thought OFO was in Washington, D.C. or in San Francisco. I can't remember where, but I follow that pretty closely too. So if you could create an opportunity for yourself, like in an ideal situation, what would it be?
I think in an ideal situation would be, I'm really passionate about facilitation and engagement. So anything where I'm engaging with users or customers or just even colleagues, I think would be a really cool opportunity. And I know there's opportunity for that in Canada, but I'd love to be based in Asia, as I already said. So,
well, I think I'm just going to leave it there with your aspirations to be involved in engagement and facilitation in Asia. I don't think there's any reason why you can't accomplish that. And to be fair, based on what you've done for your whole life, probably starting when you were 2 or something, you seem to kind of get what you want. And that's a good thing, actually. It's a good trait to have.
Yeah, I definitely persevere, that's for sure.
Well, that's awesome. Look, I really want to thank you for your time and say thanks. This was a great conversation.
Perfect. Well, and thank you, Zana. It was really great talking to you, and you're great at making the conversation flow, for sure.